Good evening, everyone. Barry Cryer, where are you, you old reprobate?
I'm up here, love.
Oh, hello. All right. Barry Cryer, 80 years old. Hope for smokers everywhere. Barry Cryer, 80 years old, and he's never looked a day under. Barry, it's such a joy to be here. So I'm really surprised to be invited because, first of all, as you know, Barry, I'm a rampant man-hating leser. What's married? That's quite difficult. But also, I'm a totally different generation. And I just want to start off by saying that Barry is one of the few comics of his generation who made a real effort to get to know us sweary, left-wing, irritating alternative comedians. And we all really, really appreciate him for that. So thanks for that, Barry. And that's why there's a few people under the age of 140 here tonight. No, I don't mean that. Also, one thing that works perfectly with me and Barry, I've given up smoking now, but I do stand in his wake occasionally, have a good sniff. It's marvellous. The other thing as well is I have to confess, he has on occasion told me the same joke quite a few times. But the advantage of that is that since the menopause, I can't remember a thing, so I just relive them with joy. Anyway, we're gonna move swiftly on because we've got a huge amount to pack in tonight. So I'm going to bring on two good friends of Barry, and we're going to find out a little bit from them about Barry's hideous past. Will you please welcome Andy Hamilton and Michael Palin? So I'm supposed to be doing the grown-up questioning bit. So can I start with Michael? Is that all right, Andy?
Yeah, yeah.
So can you just tell us a bit about how you first met Barry?
Well, I first met Barry. He was very, very kind to me because, do you remember, it was my first appearance at one of the Frost Report script meetings, and I was absolutely new and I was very nervous. And had never been to anything like this before. This is 1965, I think. And I went into the room, and all these great writers from all over Britain. And the only one who came across and shook hands with me was Barry. And he came and welcomed me and said, "Come in, and I'll you'll meet these other people."
There's a theme developing here, Barry.
And then he,
yeah,
yes, wrestled me to the ground and said, "Never do comedy again." But we did actually do something later on, which was fairly disastrous. Remember, Barry?
Late night lineup.
BBC late night lineup. We were sort of brought on as comedians for late night lineup, and you know, comedy was just not the natural home on late night lineup. It was a bit like sort of the Vatican would have been for Henry VIII. But we were brought on and did our little jokes, and we always went back to a stony-faced presenter who said, "Thank you, Barry and Michael." And one night, Dennis Potter was on, the great playwright himself. This was a big scoop, and Barry and I, we did our trainee supermen on chairs, and we sort of, how, you know, in a little village hall, jumping on and off chairs, and you'd be a superman. And it was excruciatingly embarrassing, but then they got, actually, thank you, Barry and Michael. Dennis Potter, you're one of the, and Dennis Potter said, "I want to just say, first of all, that I've come all the way down from Gloucestershire." And he said, "You know, I never realised that you'd be paying me to watch this sort of rubbish." And we knew then that he was just jealous. It was just, you know, he wasn't great on comedy, was he, Baz?
Andy, how about you? When did you meet Barry?
I think the first time, I've got a mental picture of Barry with a lager in his hand. Actually, that's just reality.
That's, yeah, that's
not
it,
a mental
it is,
picture.
Yeah.
I think it would have probably been a Christmas party at BBC Radio Light End. I've got a very strong memory, like Michael, of an established writer who I'd watched on Joker's Wild and admired, coming over and being very encouraging and supportive. What I remember most of all is an avalanche of anecdotes. Oh, because, yeah. I mean, I love telling anecdotes, but I realised immediately I was out of my league. Because Barry, the thing about Barry's anecdotes is that they hunt in packs. You know? They're like comedy velociraptors. And what amazes me about Barry, though, is I'd no idea how he ever made it as a comedy writer. Because he thinks the best of everybody. And that's a real handicap for a comedy writer. Because we're not known for that. But if we sent Barry out to Syria, right, he would come back, wouldn't he? And he would say, you know, that General Assad, he's a bit rough and ready, but he's quite a nice bloke. He knows a brilliant story about a parrot.
Should we be horrible to you for a bit now? No, we won't, because we love you.
But it's almost impossible to be horrid about
it,
me,
is,
isn't it?
It is,
I mean, he is unfunny, but that's about all you can say.
But this thing about me always telling anecdotes, Andy, I mean, when you said that, it reminded me, did I ever tell you...
Hi, Barry. It's John Keyes to wish you happy birthday. And I was thinking back to March 1966 when I walked into a church hall off Crawford Street, just up by Baker Street, and walked into a room full of people who were to become my great friends for the next 70 or 80 years. I'm thinking, of course, of Marty Feldman, Tony Jay, David Nobbs and Graham Chapman, and those are just the stiffs. So I send you my love, and I want you to know that the line that I remember best of all, when you were performing once and you did a joke that didn't go down particularly well, and you said, I may not be funny, but you have to admire me for my courage. And I'd love that line, but I want you to know I admire you for a lot more than your courage. Dear Barry, it's a joy to know you. Happy birthday.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jack Cryer and the Kites.
I'm here this evening with the Kites to honour a person who's been the single most influential man in my life. Someone who has modelled for me intelligence, kindness and sensitivity whilst being an excellent communicator, public relations dream and a shrewd businessman to boot.
Who are you talking about?
He succeeded at everything he's attempted and has become something of a guru to me. His sage-like wisdom is legendary, not only within the comedy community, but also in the worlds of politics, sport, and academia. So tonight, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, I give you our dad, Barry Cryer. I got the money. Was that the sort
yes.
of thing you meant?
It flagged a bit in the middle, but it was okay.
All right. Good. Please welcome to the stage an honorary sister and daughter to us who graces the Cryer table quite often, who also happens to be a West End and Broadway leading lady, Jenna Russell.
Tonight, you belong to me. Although we're apart, you're part of my heart. And tonight, you belong to me. Way down by the street, sweet it will seem, once more just to dream in the moonlight.
My honey, I know
in the dawn that you will be gone. At tonight, you belong. this dream. How very, very sweet it would seem, once more just to dream. In the silvery moonlight, my honey, I know, in the dawn, that you will be gone. But tonight, you belong to me, little old me.
Barry Cryer, 80. You have to be joking. I thought it was your 90th birthday. I can't be there, but now I'm quite glad I can't be. I'm not going to be at anyone's 80th, it's pathetic. Do try and get it better than that. I'd just like to thank you for all the phone calls about, you know, what are they, about every few months. Very, very nice to get a phone call from you, especially the one I got when you rang in a very, very nice, cheery voice, and I said, I'm in Udai, poor India. You said, bloody hell, I'm getting off the phone straight away. So mean, you see. I hope you have a very happy birthday. 80. Pathetic. So I'm there. I send you huge love.
Ladies and gentlemen, Count Arthur Strong!
Thank you! Thank you! Thank you! Thank you so much! Thank you! Thank you! Seriously, you are going to have to stop now. You're just embarrassing yourself. You really are the most terrific bunch. I really do. Now, I'd like to share a story with you on this very special night about a very special person who knows who you are. He is. He knows who you is. He is. I know who he is, and so does he. Now, after our national service, when I was walking through Soho in the West End of London's West End, and out of the blue, I bumped into him looking miserable. He was looking miserable, not me. I had a lovely smile on my face, which could light up any room. He told me he was going for a job in a windmill, I think it was, and if it didn't work out, he was going to buy a butcher's shop and pack it all in. I could not believe what my ears were telling me they were hearing. I looked him in the right eye, the right eye, and put my hand on his shoulder. And I spoke to him. Barry, I said, Barry Cryer, what a good idea. I can see you in a butcher shop, and I'll tell you something else, Barry. People will always need to eat meat. Sadly, though, for all us awful lovers out there, he got the job in the windmill, and the rest, as they say, is therapy. And what a wonderful career he's had, everyone. It wasn't long after that television came knocking at the door, which is a metaphor. His first big break on television was Sunday night at the London Palladium, host and compere on that. Then came the Generation Game. Play your cards right, The Price is Right, and latterly, Celebrity Come Dancing, which I've never been asked to do, incidentally. What a wonderful career the man has had. And I'll tell you something, I know he's gone. I know that. I know that. But just being in this theatre tonight, I can feel his presence. Just like he's here with us, looking down on us. Ladies and gentlemen, it's been a privilege and an honour for me to be part of this tribute tonight to Bonnie Tyler. Thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of the play.
It's not generally known that Barry Cryer is really Kevin Cryer. Yes, Kevin changed his name to Barry a very long time ago in the hope perhaps that it might lend him some spurious credibility. People might identify him, unwisely perhaps, with some towering comic legend. Alas, we know how successful that attempt has been. I've known Kevin for a very long time, and I have to tell you that he's a very, very nice person on the surface. He's resented very deeply by every comedian in the world for the simple reason that he tells their jokes far better than they do. He even invented some of them. Thanks, Kev.
Please welcome to the stage Victoria Coren Mitchell.
My father, Alan Coren, adored Barry Cryer. One of the clearest memories I have of him, perhaps the easiest way to sort of picture him now, is to think of him bounding down the stairs, all eager and enthusiastic, because Barry Cryer had just phoned up and told him a joke that he was keen to share and pretend he'd invented. And that is something that linked the two. My father, like Barry Cryer, was one of those very special people who make it their business to increase the sum of merriment and twinkling in the world. My dad died on the 18th of October 2007, one of many people who can't be here, even on video, but whose love of Barry Cryer is in the air, in the DNA of the universe. And another of those people mentioned earlier is the great comedy writer David Nobbs, who died earlier this year, a lovely and brilliant man, who actually wrote a tribute to Barry Cryer some time ago for a book. And I thought, what could be more appropriate than to read that this evening as we think about absent friends? But it's become increasingly clear to me that Barry Cryer is still alive. but I haven't brought anything else, so I'm just going to read this anyway. Barry is far too modest ever to boast of how modest he is. He describes himself as a bits and pieces man. Ridiculous. What he means is that he's good at more things than the rest of us. This means that in an era dominated by pigeonholing, he isn't taken as seriously as he should be for any of his many achievements. Together, Barry and I wrote sketches for 68 editions of Says Les. Just missed 69, the story of my life. His fertility of ideas and knowledge of showbiz was more than matched by his feeling for and love of words. He is an immaculate writer. Writer, performer, quizmaster, after-dinner speaker, drinking companion, ostrich trainer. Barry Cryer is all of these and more. But I would say that his greatest gift is one of the rarest gifts of all. Eyes light up and spirits lift when he enters a room. Knowing him is a joy.
I am in the dark, literally and metaphorically, because I'm desperately puzzled about this. I can't believe it's your 80th birthday. I actually can't believe it. It's not a pathetic compliment of the kind one gives an old age pensioner one visits. Oh, you're never 80, are you? It's not that. No, it's because we first met in 1986, and I'm almost certain that you were at least 92 then. So I don't really understand, unless you're living backwards, how you can just be 80. You've always been phenomenally old. I'm going to play along, and I'm going to wish you a very happy birthday. British comedy would not be what it was if it weren't for you. That is a simple statement of fact. You are greatly loved and greatly admired. And I hope you have a wonderful, wonderful time.
Who's this man who's just come on the stage? Will you announce yourself, please?
My name is Bob Cryer. I'm one of the better, cheaper sons, or known as the sibling who drew the short straw. But mainly, I'm your producer for this evening, which means I'm going to keep this. I'm going to keep this really quick. It's overtime equity. One of the easiest jobs I've ever had to do, because every time you pick up the phone to ask people if they want to do a job for Dad, they say yes is the first thing. But if you meet people in person and you talk about Barry Cryer as your father, they always smile, and that's the greatest legacy anyone can give you. People often ask me what it was like growing up with Barry Cryer as your father. I said it was the same as everybody else's, just with better timing. But without further ado, because that would be ado, I have some thank yous to make for all the staff and crew here who've been fantastic, to Kevin Bishop, our director, to Carol Benjamin, to all of our stage management, and chiefly the performers, the singers, the musicians, and the audience, yourselves, because if it wasn't for you, Mum wouldn't get Dad out of the house. You keep coming back time and time again to see this man who has redefined the word silly and given us the best legacy any children could imagine. So, Dad, thank you very much.
We present I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue, the antidote to panel games. At the piano is Colin Sell, and your chairman is David Mitchell.
Hello and welcome to I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue at the famous Palace Theatre in London's glittering West End. It was here, back in 1972, that Jesus Christ Superstar began the extraordinary 8-year run that was to transform the careers of its creators, Sir Tim Rice and Andrew Lloyd Webber. The great composing duo originally met when Tim Rice auditioned for a part in Lloyd Webber's first musical. But when it was discovered that Rice couldn't sing, Lloyd Webber wanted to marry him. Coincidentally, it was in 1972 that I'm Sorry I Haven't a Clue was launched, with the chairmanship then shared between the brilliant jazz trumpeter Humphrey Lyttelton and Barry Cryer. Of course, I wasn't even born at the time, but many years later, as an awestruck novice in the world of BBC light entertainment, I vividly recall how I once found myself at a party in the company of none other than Peter Cook, John Cleese, Ronnie Barker, and Barry Cryer. It's hard to convey just how excited I was by the encounter, but to put it in perspective, if you were, say, a fan of the ballet, it would be like meeting Anna Pavlova, Rudolf Nureyev, Dame Margot Fontaine, and Barry Cryer. This splendid theatre was constructed by the same architect who built the neighbouring Apollo Theatre, whose ceiling famously collapsed in 2013. A disaster which was later discovered to have been caused by old, weak material. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome on my right, Tim Brooke Taylor and Jeremy Hardy. And on my left, Graham Garden and Barry Cryer. Okay. We kick off with the round called Uxbridge English Dictionary. Sadly, the public's knowledge of our mother tongue is in an abysmal state. Many don't understand the difference between such terms as depreciation and debasement. Well, depreciation is an accounting method of reducing capital asset value, while debasement is the room under the ground floor. Many words change their meanings over time, and I'd like the teams to share any new definitions they may have noticed recently. Tim, you can start.
Suffragette. Ryanair.
Graham.
Ovaltine. A fat adolescent.
Barry.
Skyping. Astronauts playing table tennis.
Jeremy.
Asking. King of the Bottoms.
Insolent to fall off the Isle of Wight ferry.
Genealogy. What makes Aladdin sneeze?
Subordination. Installing a priest underwater.
King Penguin. Particularly annoying penguin.
Mace. What the Queen puts traps down for.
Gladiator. Unrepentant cannibal.
It's time now to play the game called Mornington Crescent. Which, as you'd expect, will be played according to the deceptively simple palace variation. What? So huffing is only allowed after the first triptych has been declared and the onside rule reinstated. However, players may challenge for positional justification and takeover play, but not if not in sequence.
Not Claire? In sequence, right.
Not if not in sequence.
Yes. Oh, right. Not if right. not in yeah. sequence, okay.
Okay, so Tim, you can start.
Finchley Road.
Mornington Crescent.
Oh. Oh, nice.
So from myself, Tim, Jeremy, Graham and Barry, it's goodbye. Goodbye.
Central, give me Dr. Jen. He's got what I need, I'll say hands. Oh, when the world goes wrong and I got those blues, he's the man that makes me get out of my dancing shoes. Well, the more I get, the more I want, it seems. I paid your Dr. Jazz in my dreams When I'm trouble bound and mixed, he's the guy that gets me fixed. Hello Central, give me Dr. Jazz.